Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Dave Weiner here. It is Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. And sometimes when I'll do a flurry of tweets, not quite a tweet storm, but it's a little self-aggrandizing to call something a tweet storm, especially if you don't get a whole lot of feedback from the people who've heard it. So I actually had a flash where you know the guy on Delta, the guy who got up and, you know, it was a very awkward speech, and it was a rant, but I found out later, hearing an interview with a woman who was sitting next to him, that she had basically talked him into doing this, that he had been talking to her about, you know, what it felt like to be a Trump voter and having won. And she said, well, why don't you just get up and tell everybody about this? And so the guy gets up and she videos the whole thing. I think she even told him that she was going to video him. And so we all saw it and were shocked, immediately put ourselves, I did at least, put myself in the position of a passenger on that plane and wondering what's next. What's this guy going to do next? Is he going to hurt somebody? And is it going to be me, or am I going to have to stand up and defend somebody against him? But it didn't go that route. I don't know what happened. Did he sit down? Or he probably did, because he went all the way to the destination. Nobody ever said anything to him. And then the president and CEO of Delta announces that two things. One is that this man is going to be banned from Delta for life, and that he's going to refund all of the other passengers on the flight. And I thought, this is outstanding. It's spectacular. It's very unlike Delta to do anything like that. I mean, I've had Delta unabashedly cancel my seat on a flight that I had reserved months in advance, saying, well, you didn't read the fine print on the deal that got you the special price that said basically, we're free to take you off the flight if we want to give the seat to somebody who paid more. I mean, maybe I would have liked to have actually known that instead of have it being buried. You know, it's I don't have the warm fuzzies for Delta, even though because they've acquired so many airlines, you pretty much have to fly them like, you know, United and American, because, you know, that's basically what's left. But then I thought about this from a whole other point of view. What about this poor guy? I know we're not supposed to say that, right? I mean, he's the white guy, and he got up and he said some nasty shit, and et cetera, et cetera. But what would he say if you could ask him, say, look, I'm not going to judge you on what you say, and I'm not even going to tell people your name, so you don't even have to worry about that. Tell me what was really going on for you that day. What was inside of you that you felt you needed to say? And I imagine that he would have said, look, all my life, everybody's been saying to me, fuck you, you're powerless, you know, and he could go on and on with stories that, and no doubt, very convincing stories, very real stories. I'm not invalidating those stories at all. I'll tell you why, because I don't even know the guy, but I'm guessing that relative to him, I'm a very privileged person, but I feel like that. It's like all the time I'm being told, no, you're powerless. You don't count. We'll just keep on doing it, even though you're telling us that it's wrong. We're not just going to listen. We're just going to, whatever. I feel that way. And if I feel that way, then I certainly understand that other people feel that way. So what is it about being a Trump voter today that makes you want to get up? Actually, I'm going to say he didn't want to get up. He was just asked to do it, and the idea didn't come from him. Let's just say, paint the worst picture possible. What made this guy get up? It's because he just did something powerful. And for the first time in his life, we actually have to listen to him. And because he voted for Trump. And you're hearing that, I think, from a lot of people. you know, one of the things I wrote about this yesterday, one of the things that I highly recommend anybody, you know, if you, you know, we put so much time into frenzy, you know, objecting to this tweet or that tweet or arguing with somebody online. And, you know, none of that actually accomplishes anything. It seriously does not accomplish anything. And it doesn't even make you feel good anymore, because for a while it was a release. It was a way of getting anger out of your system. But, you know, that was released a long, long time ago and has been replaced with something that feels a lot more toxic and a lot more desperate and hopeless and all of that. I mean, you know, what started out being a grand cause, and believe me, I believe this is only beginning, that this is like, you know, every book or movie I've ever seen about war, the story is always the same. At the beginning, the war is a great, glorious cause, and we're going to go out and show them. Because for the N years before that, we weren't at war. We forgot what war is like, and we've built up all this anger, and here, or whatever, pride, or life, just life wanting to express itself, comes out in the form of anger, you know? But once you get into a war, you learn that it's just not a good place to be, because getting out of a war is a lot harder than getting into one. That's the problem with war. And if you could just say, okay, I've had enough of this, let's go back to not having war. It's not that easy. And the grudges carry on for generations, and it's just it's a flaw. Or a anachronistic feature of humanity, something that served us in evolution that no longer really serves us, but we're stuck in it now. And but there is actually a way. It hasn't gone too far yet. We still could turn around from this. That's the amazing thing about this period of time. It is still possible to turn around. And so what is going to get us there to a place where we could even contemplate turning around? And that means that, and now I'm going to give you a prescription. Dr. Dave's going to actually give you a prescription for this. And the prescription is to listen to the Run-Up podcast, RUN-UP. It's something created by the New York Times. And it was initially set up to be the lead up to the election. And it's continued after the election. And they had a series of three conversations between people, each of them between a pair of people. And here's what we know about what each of these pairs of people have in common. Number one is they know each other. In some cases, they're friends, longtime friends. And in another case, they're family member. Like, two of them are friends, one of them is a father and a son. And the other feature is one of them voted for Trump and the other voted for Clinton. And the conversations can be very difficult. All of them, every one of them is difficult to listen to. And there comes a point in each of the conversations, and in one of them, it's pretty much the whole conversation, where one person is saying something and it makes no sense. It just doesn't make sense. And what you want to say is, it doesn't make sense. And for this reason, and the person on the other side tries to do that and fails at doing it. In one case, the other person didn't even try. And that was the two best friends, women friends, one conservative, one liberal, and they have their kids go to the same school, so they know each other, and they are involved in a lot of projects together. They socialize with each other. They're very good friends. It's very clear. They love each other. They say it all the time, that they have these very strong feelings. They never actually got, in that case, to the core, the crux of the issue of, I don't feel they did. But in the other two cases, they really did. There was this one point in the first one. I, you know what? Actually, let's not go there. You really do. You should take the time and listen to these. It's a very small fraction of the time that you waste on social media arguing with people. It's totally worth it. I promise you. And what you come out of it, what I came out of it with, is feeling that our problems are not insurmountable. It just is. We've gotten out of the habit of actually, we've lost empathy. We don't know how to put ourselves in other people's shoes anymore. And so we've accepted and this goes for everybody. This is on both sides. We have accepted a cartoon character version of who the other person is. And this even includes people who are members of our own family and includes people who are best friends, because we just don't go to these places where it would come up that there are real people that are being affected by this decision. And they're being affected very negatively, and they will be even more negatively affected by it. And my belief is that we are still not at war so much with each other that would not, if that were allowed to penetrate, that would change things dramatically. And there is enough time for this to happen between now and December 19th. And there is. It doesn't take very long. You just have to sit down and listen to these three podcasts. And you will come out of it a changed person. I promise you, it will change you. And my takeaway from it is that we need to create more experiences like this. And we need to build this into our lives systematically. And there are some very simple things that could be done. Very, very simple. For example, MSNBC, all of their shows either originate from New York or Washington, D.C., and that means that all the guests they have come from New York or Washington, D.C. Occasionally, they have somebody from out of the area. They have to fly in to be on the show or get to another studio, but they're remote. They're not there. But when they do actually bring people in from the middle of the country, they usually are very eye-opening because a new perspective is being presented, whether they be from Kansas or Alabama or Michigan or Utah or Wyoming or Arizona, because there is a fundamental difference. And the difference is the people in the middle of the country are like the guy on the Delta flight. They've been told all their lives, fuck you, you don't matter. And what happened, what changed is they just said to us, fuck you, we do matter. I think the simplest way out of this is to say, you're right, you do matter. Just that simply, and in many ways as possible, as unmistakable as possible, to let them know, message received, loud and clear, you're absolutely right. It has always been true that you matter. No but. No, I want something in return. No, nothing. It's just pure and simple acknowledgement that yes, you matter. We got it. Now what? Do we have to torch the place now? Because we have just acknowledged this. And they have to feel, and they're entitled to feel, that it's sincere. There's no but to it. They do matter. It's just obvious. It's like, come January 20th, if nothing changes, you're going to have to say President Trump. You're not going to be able to say not my president, because that will be a lie. He will be your president. For better or worse, and in my opinion, mostly worse. I look around me. One of the realities that sinks in after this event is all of the people that I would trust more as president than Donald Trump. Like pretty much any NBA coach has had more experience in getting people to get along with each other and work together and compromise and make tough decisions when you have to say, well, you know, it's worth compromising with this person, but not with this because I'm focused on a goal. And the goal of the coach is usually very simple. They want to win every game, every time they go out. Well, that's not true. Coach Popovich has point has done this, and no, you don't want to win every game. Your eye, and if you're in the top echelon of the league, as he almost always is, he's the coach of the San Antonio Spurs. He's just that good a coach, and that he almost always, there hasn't been a time in the last 10 years that his team hasn't been in contention for the title, and they've won the title a few times, as a matter of fact. So in his case, there are some games he chooses to lose because he wants his players rested, and he's trying to have a good long run in the postseason. For most other teams that really don't have a realistic hope of winning the title, they're pretty much trying to win every game that they play. And if you ever were to hear that one of these coaches actually changed what he did so that Nike would do better, or some company that he is invested in would do better, well, then you'd say that coach needs to go, because this is not how our team works. It's pretty simple. Any one of them would be better, you know. Almost any reporter would be better. The guy on the fucking airplane saying, fuck you, I voted for Trump, he would be better, because he has clearly not only got something to say, but he didn't attack anybody. He didn't physically threaten anybody, really. That's saying a lot to think that guy would be better as president than the person who, unless we do something, will be the president. And the truth, and this is the final thing I want to say, the truth of the matter is, while most reporters just completely dismiss the idea of the Electoral College playing a role, it's our last hope. It's like if you were a sports fan and you were watching a game and it's the fifth inning and the team's down 9-0, and you just saw the coach immediately, the manager of the team, just substituted all of his star players for bullshit players. You'd think, now he gave up too soon. 9-0 is not insurmountable in the fifth inning. You could still win the game. That's the point, as our coaches really are demoralized and we can't look to them for leadership. They're trying to do something other than lead us out of oblivion. And it's not really their job to do it anyway. So we need something new, and we need to do it quickly. We need to show the people who elected Trump that their message has been received without requiring the destruction of our country and the world. So thank you very much. Bye-bye.